propaganda, indoctrination, race politics, and genocide. This is one big package deal that we're getting these days. We're facing a tsunami of propaganda in the media and entertainment and news media, indoctrination of schools and race politics in the streets, but the ultimate goal is actually genocide. Romans 12 verse 1 to 2 says, "And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may be able to prove that which is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God." Right now, there's a lot of media attention on statue removal, especially based around Charlottesville in Virginia. This is part of the South, and they have been targeted for removing Confederate war memorials. There's a lot of war memorials because, of course, Virginia being the premier state of the Union, in fact, most of America's first presidents all came from Virginia, such as George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and so on. And so the Jefferson Davis statue, he was the president of the Confederate States, or the South as we know it, during the war between the states. And there's been a lot of campaigning to remove his statue, even though he is an honorable man, who they never managed to, even though there was a lot of cries for bringing Jefferson Davis to trial for war crimes or treason, they never dared bring him into the courts in America after the war between states, because they knew he had the Constitution on his side. And he had every right to do what he did. And so they realized in the end, the Union were saying, don't even dare bring him near the court. This is going to be a public relations disaster for us. We don't want to be looking at the law and the Constitution on this matter. Well, 11th of May this year in New Orleans, a construction crew works to remove this monument of Jefferson Davis in the night, in the midnight hours. Why? You know, as our Lord said, that the wicked love the darkness. And here they are removing this highly beloved and respected man of the South, Jefferson Davis, who even his enemies could not bring a charge against him. Confederate General Beauregard also removed at night, 17th of May 2017. And this has been followed by all kinds of other, like the Liberty Place monument on 24th of August. But the prize that they were after was that of General Robert E. Lee, one of the most respected leaders of the South, a man respected and beloved not only by his own people, but by his enemies. You won't find anybody of the North, even in the days of Robert E. Lee, who could say a word against him. In fact, President Lincoln first offered the command of the Union armies to General Robert E. Lee. He was the best. He had been the, principal of West Point, training their leaders at one point. He's a great and respected man. And to remove the statue of this man, why? For what possible purpose? It stood there for three quarters of a century. Here was one of the Robert E. Lee statues being inaugurated. And people have pointed out those people in white are not the Klan. They are the Virginia State Militia, the Richmond Light Infantry Blues, and that was their uniform. And now they're wanting to pull this down, this statue, this monument to one of the most beloved people. And now they are defacing these monuments. Robert E. Lee was always understood as a Christian gentleman, a man who was never known to lose his temper, raise his voice, do anything dishonorable. He is one of the only people ever to graduate from West Point. Not one of the only. He was the only person ever to graduate from West Point without a single demerit, which is basically impossible. You can't be in a military academy and not get a demerit for something. Just like Field Marshal Erwin Rommel, an honorable man, beloved by both his own people and by his enemies. The children of the Confederacy put this plaque up because we desire to perpetuate in love and honor the heroic deeds of those who enlisted in the Confederate Army and upheld its flag through 4 years of war. We, the children of the South, have united in an organization called Children of the Confederacy, in which our strength, enthusiasm, and love of justice can exert its influence. We therefore pledge ourselves to preserve pure ideals, to honor our veterans, to study and teach the truths of history, one of the most important of which is that the war between the states was not a rebellion, nor was its underlying cause to sustain slavery, and to always act in a manner that will reflect honor upon our noble and patriarchal ancestors. And amongst these, one of the most respected of certainly Robert E. Lee, who not even the North could, at the height of hysteria, could bring a charge against him. But today, you've got politicians who know nothing about history and care less, standing up and making a stand to pull down these monuments to honorable people. And of course, when elected officials do that, the next thing is you get people thinking they can desecrate and deface these monuments, and Robert E. Lee's statue being one of the main targets. And so the council there has voted to sell the Lee statue in Charlottesville. Other monuments have been defaced, and this has started to escalate. You allow it in one place, next thing it spreads to others. And they ripped down the statue of the Confederate soldier in Durham, North Carolina, and a whole lot of people dancing on it, including this product of cultural Marxism and junk food. Why on earth would... And these people are not... They're not dust in the scales compared to the gold of people like Robert E. Lee. You think of the money, the sacrifice, the hard work of people to honor their war dead in memory of the Confederate dead. And here, know-nothing individuals are jackhammering and destroying these monuments. But it all started in our backyard, Sodom on the Hillside, up on the hill. And there we had this Gomorrah on Devil's Peak. And I remember standing in 2015 waiting for our pro-life trailer to come up that we could get some photo pictures with the spectacular view of the mountain behind and with Jamison Hall. And while I was waiting there, I was asking students walking by and so on, do you know whose statue this is? This is, of course, the prominent place right in the center of the university he founded and paid for. Cecil Rhodes, after whom Rhodesia was named. And nobody, not one person I spoke to in that 1st of February 2015 could tell me whose statue that was. But just a few weeks later, none of them could study there because of the presence of the statue, which so deeply distressed them that now they were not able to study at the university, where they happened to have a statue to the founder of the university. I mean, how strange is that? I'm not a fan of Cecil John Rhodes. He's not in the top 100 of my favorite characters in history. But he did pay for the university. He did build up the Rhodes Trust. He did give us Kirstenbosch Gardens. He didn't take a cent of public money for himself. He, in fact, donated to the city and the country, Westbrook, which today is called Knoddendal, the president's official residence, and so much more. He didn't get public money to pay for him to have a house. He built a house with his own money and gave it to the country. How strange is that, considering how politicians are today? And suddenly, you had this hysteria. Now, if the university had dealt decisively with these thugs, these know-nothing fools, and said, you are not going to touch a national monument because it's a crime, then it wouldn't have gone any further. But instead, the vice chancellor stood up and encouraged this nonsense. And next thing you know, you've got thousands of students who apparently have nothing better to do with their time than to gather to protest to see the statue removed. I mean, don't they have studies, assignments? Is there nothing better these people could do? I don't know any employer who would want to employ any graduate of UCT. I mean, really, this university used to be respected. But the people coming out of it right now, I don't think so much. An extraordinary media campaign and the bullying tactics, the mob hysteria against the statue of Cecil John Rhodes on the campus of University of Cape Town not only undermined education in the country, it led to riots. Just according to the Ministry of Education in this country, which, by the way, is headed by the chairman of the Southern Communist Party, Bladen Zamani, but he reported at the end of 2015, 300 million rands worth of damage had been done on a university campus by the Rhodes Must Fall group, half of which, 150 million, was done to burning down the University of the Northwest campus. And yes, why would you not want to employ a man like that? And what have they achieved? Here the government was having the country in regular blackouts, corruption stacked up the ceiling, rhino poaching, candlelight hunting, but the most important thing you can do, attack a statue of someone who died over 100 years ago. This is going to improve things? Is it not interesting that in 1902, which isn't that long ago, Cecil Rhodes was so honored, he's one of the most respected and honored people in Cape Town, South Africa, and the world. This is people turning up in Cape Town for his procession, and in the Matopas near Bulawayo in Rhodesia for the funeral, the actual internment of his body, and world's view in the Matopas. The statue of Cecil Rhodes in downtown Gardens and in Kimberley, which is built by his money, basically, and of course Rhodes Memorial. This man was deeply honored in his lifetime as a person of great achievement. Now, he wasn't my kind of person, not the kind of person I would lift up or give a lecture Reformation Society on, but he did not take from the country. He invested in the country, and he's continuing to invest in education. Even Nelson Mandela admitted that he got his education, both primary, high school, and university, as a result of Cecil Rhodes's investments in the very schools that he's at. Of course, Jan van Riebeck then got all the blame. I mean, you can't just stop with Cecil Rhodes. And Jan van Riebeck, they all wanted to remove his statue. And next thing you know, they're damaging monuments all over the country. And this went berserk. And our poor horses who died during the Anglo-Boer War, lots of them. There's a memorial to the horses who died in the Anglo-Boer War. And would you believe it, EFF thugs had to go and wreck and destroy this monument. Why? And by the way, this used to have a beautiful horse trough where horses could, or dogs, or anyone going past could drink from. That's even been removed over the years, and they've got a fence around, so not even animals are benefiting from it. It was meant to be a practical monument, too. This kind of mindless hysteria and attacks of things that should be the greatness of a nation lies in how it treats its creatures, the animals. And then this Anglo-Boer War monument also going up in flames because of some EFF nonsense. Why and what? Decolonialize education. Well, that would mean destroying all the buildings, getting rid of the written language and books and all the rest of it. Colonial symbols must fall. Is that written in English? Isn't that a colonial symbol as well? Why don't they go back to the illiterate languages and live in mud huts and thatched roofs and get the witch doctor to throw some bones? But this is the sort of thing students are involved in. Is this really worthwhile their time and effort? And shouldn't we remind ourselves that the Boers suffered quite horribly at the hands of servants of Queen Victoria? But the Boers didn't take down her statues or those of Cecil Rhodes or anyone else associated with the British colonial regime when they took control of the country. Not in the days of Herzog or Verwoerd or P.W. Botha. I mean, nobody damaged the statues. And they had a legitimate reason why they might have objected. But they recognize it's part of our history. Is this not like ISIS? The Muslim terrorist groups bulldozing down monuments and tombs of Nahum, Daniel, and Jonah, destroying monuments in the Middle East. Now, back to America. They have got a National Historic Landmark District of Grand Avenue containing unique combinations of commemorative structures, community planning, and distinctive architecture. All of these monuments, going through Matthew Fontaine Maury, the Confederate naval officer and oceanographer, through Stonewall Jackson, Jefferson Davis, Robert E. Lee, Jeb Stuart, the great cavalry commander, all of these are in the targeteers of these Marxists. Confederate monuments, Missouri Civil War museums, Jeb Stuart's monuments, Stonewall Jackson, these are beloved Christian heroes. Even Stone Mountain, they're wanting all of these great heroes, Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee, and Jefferson Davis's images to be drilled out of the mountain. This was done at great expense by people who loved their history, and it's a tourist attraction. Why would you want to deface a tourist attraction that's bringing people from around the world to this? But these are the sort of things anti-historian people are. Remember what Karl Marx said, the first battlefield is the rewriting of history. And these are some of the Confederate monuments around the US, which they are estimating that they need to target and tear down. Well, personally, if you want to tear down any monument in the United States, I think Lincoln's temple would be a good place to start. So naturally, there's reaction. People who want to defend the Southern heritage, and especially Robert E. Lee's most beloved person. You cannot change history, but you can learn from it. And that's the point. I don't particularly like Cecil John Rhodes, but his monument reminds me of the important place he played in this country, and I wouldn't want to remove it. Because whether I like Timor's policies or not, he's still a major part of our history, especially in Cape Town, Kimberley, and Rhodesia. And so removing the monument doesn't enrich us, it impoverishes us. Well, you can imagine, people have come out with the Confederate flags, hand off our monuments, Confederate history matters. Yep. And so here's a group of people who they're calling nationalists gathering in Charlottesville, Virginia to protest. And they're quoting an interesting verse from the Bible, from Proverbs, "Remove not the ancient landmark which your fathers have set." Very good and appropriate verse to quote from. And so now they're calling white nationalists lead torchlight rally. It's interesting they say that because I've seen pictures of black Confederates marching in support, waving the Confederate flags and supporting keeping these monuments. So it's not just whites. Why do they assume that only white people care about this? And now they're speaking about an alt-right group. Have you ever seen them speaking about leftist groups? And of course they've got torch bearing. The reason why you often get people using torches is this was used especially in the bring down of the Iron Curtain and freeing of Eastern Europe. The people used the candle and the torch as a symbol that all the darkness cannot put out the smallest light. Light is more powerful than darkness, which is an important biblical theme. So this is the group. It's not a huge group. I'm told there were about 100 right-wing extremist nationalists, as I want to call them, rallying around to protect this monument of Robert E. Lee. Brave people. Well, of course, it's not surprising that the loyal white knights of the Ku Klux Klan decided to also have a rally there because, and I quote the verse, "Remove not the ancient landmark which our fathers have set," from Proverbs 22:28. Stop the cultural genocide of white people. They're making a racial issue of it, but then the enemy's also making a racial issue of it from the other side. This is what the media loves. Now, understand the communist dialectic. The Marxist dialectic is thesis, antithesis, synthesis. What you want is synthesis, or what they want. So, they do the thesis, they provoke, because they want a reaction, the antithesis. And from that comes what they really wanted, which was the synthesis. And so now you can see the media loves it when the Ku Klux Klan pitches up and they've got flags like this, which incorporate the battle flag of the Confederacy, which they in some ways are defaming, because in many people's minds the Ku Klux Klan is absolutely evil. Although we've had black pro-lifers pointing out that Planned Parenthood kills more black people in a day than the Ku Klux Klan has in all of history. You know, so, you know, let's get things in perspective here. And so they've branded the Ku Klux Klan as terrible racists. Now, there's not that many Ku Klux Klan people around. There's even black people demonstrating with the Confederate flag against the idea of removing Robert E. Lee's statue. But here, they say New Orleans, hottest new dance, racist tears. And so there's anti-monument protesters as well gathering. So you've got the thesis, you've got the antithesis, and this is what they're wanting. You've got, it's hideous. You don't want to listen to the kind of vile, vulgar swearing of these leftists at people who're standing with the Confederate flags. Now, these are some of the people with the loyal white knights. Obviously, you're saying we're going to kill all you whites, you're going to destroy all your monuments and so on. You expect some of the white nationalist groups to get up in arms and react. But this is the image that the media wants, because this is to stereotype. And, of course, you've got all kinds of protest one way and the other, and next thing you've got violent. Look at the amount of cameras. The press love this. This kind of confrontation is exactly what they're after. They've been provoking for it. And here you've got counter-protest, and notice how some people turn up there in their Ku Klux Klan outfits, different flags, the knights, and then here's the poor police trying to get between the two mobs, which is not a very thankful task to be in. Some people turned up there with it looks like shields. I suppose they're expecting things to be thrown at them, and apparently that all sorts of hideous things are thrown at them, not just rocks and bottles. And so there's naturally clashes, which is what the Marxist dialectic wants. You want violence. That's what they're trying to provoke. And so they seek to provoke it. And, I mean, look at this character here with his pants hanging so far down that, I mean, are they even on? And this is so typical. What's he doing coming up to them? Doubtless he's trying to provoke an action, a reaction. And look at the amount of people coming out there with their... They've got goggles. Why? They're expecting to get tear gassed or sprayed with mace, perhaps. And they've got these masks so that they can't be identified easily. And these are left-wing protesters. And naturally, there is going to be... Some people even come with the gas masks because they're expecting what's going to come. Some are wearing different types of helmets. And so this is the kind of fighting they want. And notice all the cameramen and the just behind. They love this sort of thing. Violence and hatred. They provoke. And then somewhere along the line, somebody's going to react, and that's what they wanted. And the classic is, this is the picture that'll probably be winning a Pulitzer Prize or something. This character driving through a group of protesters, of which at least one person was killed. Now, the interesting thing that's come about here is to discover that the person who drove this car is a Hillary Clinton and Obama campaign organizer, registered Democrat. But funnily enough, the alternate right leader who organized the whole thing and conceived the whole idea, he's also a Hillary Clinton and Obama Democrat organizer. Now, Heather Mayer is one of the people who was killed when this car plowed in. I have no doubt that this was completely and utterly planned. This is exactly what they wanted. The people who wrote the script for this, I don't think this was accidental. It could be construed as, but if it was accidental, it's exactly what they wanted. And now you can see battle around the monuments. For those people who think history doesn't matter, I mean, I know some people asking, why are you a missionary spending so much time on history? Because that's where the battle is. I mean, they're fighting history. Guilt manipulation, twisting of things. I have been hearing since the first couple of months after I was converted how evil the missionaries were. I mean, at every missions conference I've been at, I've heard so much guilt manipulative garbage and twisting of history and dishonesty against missionaries. I've realized you've got to know your history to counter that. There's a whole range of targets, but to destroy the monuments is key, and we'll get to why. I mean, this is a target. Wake up, America, Marxism is here. This is, because one of the key things about Karl Marx, you've got to remove all the old monuments, and you've got to replace them with new ones. You've got to remove the old gods, and you've got to replace them with new gods, and so on. Dinesh D'Souza, you know who he is. Dinesh D'Souza's the author, and he's also the... film producer who's made quite a few films on Obama, Hillary Clinton, America, Obama 2016, and others. You've doubtless come across many of those. Well, anyway, Dinesh D'Souza, who's an Indian, now American, who has written that he's a very well-respected author and film producer in America. He writes, well, the white supremacist organizer of Charlottesville was an Obama supporter and Occupy Wall Street activist. Intriguing. Now, Donald Trump, of course, nothing he can do is good enough for the leftist media, just like in days of P.W. Border. His Rubicon speech might have been the most far-reaching, dramatic reforms ever. They acted like he had just gone back into dark ages. Nothing that Mandela did was wrong. Nothing that P.W. Bush did was right. In the same way, nothing that Obama did was wrong. Nothing that Trump does can be right. They are going to twist it all. And whatever he did is not good enough. And so they keep, who cares what they say. Your vote was a hate crime. What is your vote was a hate crime? Voting for Donald Trump was a hate crime. You had no right to vote for anyone except Hillary Clinton. That's what it's saying to Americans. Voting for anyone except Hillary Clinton who's a pro-abortion, pro-KGB, pro-homosexual marriage and all the rest of it, pro-pornography, pervert, if you don't vote for her, you are guilty of a hate crime, which basically means you don't have a right to live. I hate white cracker killers. You know what they mean by cracker? It's another word for whites. Die, whites, die. Here's some people's tweets to David Duke, who's one of the conservative organizers of the alt-right's march. He's going down, extermination for all you cockroaches, coming up soon, love it when you cry. The alt-right should be exterminated. Now these are, I mean, would you think that's hate speech? Death threats on the internet, is this not something serious? But no, that's not a hate crime. You know, if you quote what Islam says in the Quran, that's a hate crime. Kill whitey, not a hate crime. Lol, your grandkids are going to be brown. And the Jew will replace you. We are replacing you. And here they are posing beneath a monument that they've just defaced and pulled down. What does this mean? I mean, I would have thought that, you know, when we destroyed a Russian tank in Angola, we posed for a picture on top of a Russian tank. We destroyed some of the enemy's top weaponry. Got pictures of the MiG shot down, Hind helicopters and pieces. I mean, that was a trophy. This to them is a trophy. Why? Because history matters. Kill white people. You, I don't know what this is all saying, but I do get scum. Oh, is that a Soviet flag we see in the middle there? Hammond, sickle and staff. There's all these people concerned about a Ku Klux Klan. How many people did the Ku Klux Klan kill? Not as many as Planned Parenthood kills every single day through abortion. And this? Why? Smash the white man march. Now notice this. Anti-fascists, anti-Nazi, good night, white pride. What's he doing? Kicking this guy lying on the ground on the head. Northeast anti-fascist, anti-fascist. This is the Antifa. If you've heard of Antifa, this is Antifa. Now, why is this red flags, red flags, red and black flags, masks and so on, smash the white man? Is this racist? What do you think? Now, a week ago, I posted this picture on We Love God's Animals Facebook page. It's of a private soldier sharing, presumably, milk with a kitten. This is during the Second World War, when starvation was quite rampant, and there's a lot of shortage of supply. I thought this was a beautiful picture and I posted it. Next thing, my poor innocent daughter shares it and she gets deluged with all kinds of threats and hate from her friends, many of whom are obviously leftists in Cape Town from dance groups and so on, threatening her, has her in tears to the extent she has a rolling page full of reactions, lots of, take it down, we thought that you were a friend, and you know, there's lots of people in the dance community that looked at your friend, you must take this off your page now. Well, of course, in terror, she deleted the whole page, the whole post, or the whole thread. Why? Can't you see this is a German soldier? So my question is, are you suggesting that Germans were irredeemably evil, no German in the Second World War was capable of doing anything nice and good? I know a lot of veterans of the Second World War who'll give you all kinds of anecdotes of kindness shown by their enemies. And my father's one of them who had the highest respect for the German army, and particularly the Afrika Korps and Erwin Rommel. And I then did a Google search to try and find other pictures of World War II soldiers showing kindness to animals. And this is all I could come up with. Sorry, I'll show those just now. I came up with a whole lot of others. But in the meantime, my daughter's getting threatened and having friends literally threatening her and calling her Nazi and everything else like this because she's posted a post which actually says you're missing the main point. The point is, real men are kind to animals. Proverbs 12 verse 10, a good man is kind to his animals, the wicked are cruel to his. That's the caption. But no, they've got to do all kinds of attacks. So I made a comment that this politically correct. Well, one of the people there thought that was a compliment, because he thought politically correct is a wonderful thing. But being politically correct is like taking a test where you're given all the answers, and neither requires you to think. Because political correctness says, they're not telling you how to think critically, they're telling you what the answer is, you know. Mandela good, Porter bad, apartheid evil, white men evil, black men innocent, black men victims, white men guilty, you know. It's just, you know, very simple, politically correct, you know what you're meant to say. Truth is now the new hate speech. Political correctness is destroying the very fabric of society. Never before in history have people been so afraid to stand up against absurdity for fear of being labeled a racist, a homophobe, or a bigot. Get rid of political correctness. We need to get people talking again. Hate speech is just free speech that liberals don't like. People used to think that free speech was essential for freedom. Today, they're calling anything they don't like hate speech. Yes, wait a minute, aren't we allowed to have a discussion here? I mean, how do you know my motive? For example, I know that my daughter never had a political thought in her mind when she posted that picture. She is just thinking real men are kind to animals. In the middle of a horrible world war, here's one person doing something nice for an animal. I mean, isn't that a good thing? Oh no, boy. And I said, this war's been over for 72 years. For goodness sake, give it a break. A hate crime requires thought police. They know where the word thought police comes from. We have got a whole range of language police, a culture of complaint, victims revolution. We've got the rise of identity studies and the closing of the liberal mind. And politically correct bedtime stories, the state of American mind bullies. How the leftist culture of fear and intimidation silences anybody from speaking. Silencing how the left is killing free speech, freedom from speech, end discussion. The new thought police inside the left assaults on free speech and free minds. Trigger warning is the fear of being offensive, killing free speech. If you are white on University of Cape Town, you dare not say just about anything except aping the politically correct and having the Stockholm syndrome. If you're a black person and you make even the most innocent comment, like this poor girl from SRC, what's her name? Zizzy, there she was. Made a most innocent comment about we're normalizing sin. And next thing, she is hounded and terrorized as a person who could get over 4,000 votes for being vice president of SRC. And next thing, her life's not worth living up there. They just about destroyed her. I mean, forget about if you're white. Even if you're black, if you say the wrong thing, they will crush you. So, here I had my daughter in absolute tears, not thinking she could ever go out again, see any of these people again, go to ballroom dancing, anything again, because of the reaction she got for posting a pro-animal, We Love God's Animal post. I mean, really and truly, muzzled. This is the fact. Well, the term thought police comes from 1984 by George Orwell, which was one of my separate books at school in Rhodesia. And it's 14 years old, we're studying, first we studied Animal Farm, then we did 1984 by George Orwell, and they were brilliant, absolutely extraordinary. And I remember being gripped by this. And you just take Animal Farm, which was a satire, because George Orwell was a communist, but then he went to the Soviet Union and he saw communism and he was converted against it. And so he came back and he wrote a brilliant, funny satire where the politicians are all the pigs, and they've got these different laws, the seven commandments of animalism, which became the five, because whatever goes upon two legs is the enemy, got crossed out. And whatever goes upon four legs or its wings is a friend, cross that up, because of course you've got to have counter-revolutionaries, it's got to be executed. No animal shall wear clothes, don't need that. Four legs good, two legs bad, cross it up better, because the pigs start to walk on their hind legs. No animal shall sleep in a bed, and added with sheets. No animal shall drink alcohol to excess, the pigs grew to like the alcohol. No animal shall kill any other animal without cause. They start to kill a whole lot of the other animals. All animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. This is communism. This is classic. Well, George Orwell later on wrote 1984, which is a far more dark political satire. ingSoc, English Socialism, where the people are mobilized for worshipping Big Brother, cult of personality, which of course is like Stalin's worship. Even though there's questions whether he even exists. But anyway, there's a cult of personality, whether he's a real person or not, doesn't matter. And they also have hate, 2 minutes of hate, when you've got to pour out your hate. So they show a picture of the enemy on the screen and everyone's got to pour out their hate for 2 minutes. But then you also have hate weeks, sort of like what they have at university around here for hate week. And war is peace. Freedom is slavery. Big Brother is watching you. Ignorance is strength. And so everything, in fact, makes sense there, because the Ministry of Peace runs the war. The Ministry of Plenty organizes the starvation and rationing. The Ministry of Love does the tortures. It's doublethink, black white, and all of the brilliant insights. Some people thought, you know, what a brilliant, innovative, ingenious author George Orwell was. And as he said, no, I just have reported what I saw in the Soviet Union. I mean, this is communism. So you've got Oceania running basically United States as the next Britain and taking over the rest of the world, English-speaking world. Eurasia, the Soviet Union takes over Europe. And then you've got East Asia, which is China and Japan, taking over the middle. And then you've got the disputed regions that they fight over forever. The story of 1904 is written from the perspective of Winston Smith. He works in the Ministry of Truth, changing history, deleting old records. Like, just take this in history. Here's one of the top KGB executioners, but then he fell into disrepute and he got vaporized. Literally became an unperson, is the word. And they even had to paint out of the pictures because now he is in disfavor and he's just vanished. This comes from the book The Vanishing Commissar. So inspired by this, they would vaporize unpersons, people who were once great leaders and now they're not. And so George Orwell writes, every record has been destroyed or falsified. Every book has been rewritten. Every picture has been repainted. Every statue and street building has been renamed. Every date has been altered. And the process is continuing day by day, minute by minute. History has stopped. Nothing exists except an endless present in which the party is always right. That's just one of the books written by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. We never make mistakes. That's a quote from the party. Because you see, the party is God. And as we understand the infallibility of Scripture and the perfection of God, so the communist has his God as the party. And that's why the party never makes mistakes. Even if they've done the exact opposite of what they used to do, it doesn't matter. Even Joan of Arc statue is now being targeted for being torn down. Joan of Arc. I mean, what did Joan of Arc ever do wrong? Really? Give us a break. But if thought corrupts language, language can also corrupt thought. And so you have Newspeak in 1984, where he was seeing the rise of new terms. And just think of the new speech we've got today. A thought crime. Marriage equality. I mean, where did this come in? And there's all sorts of strange. Since when is there a hate crime? Isn't every crime a hate crime? Whoever controls the past controls the future. Whoever controls the present controls the past. In other words, this is another take on Karl Marx's dictum, the first battlefield is the rewriting of history. If they can twist history, they can get you to, well, look what the ANC is doing. They have reinvented themselves from a murderous Marxist terrorist group into a liberation movement. And those of us who fought to defend our country from communism were evil racists, and they don't know what to do with the communists, so let's not even mention them. So you get the 2013 Mandela Long Walk to Freedom film. There's not a single white communist. No Joe Slover, no Ronnie Kishels, none of them. Everyone in the ANC are black or Indian. There's not one single black policeman, not one single black prison guard or black soldier. So all the whites are evil and all the blacks are good. Simple. I mean, why complicate the story with facts? And so the whole Long Walk to Freedom story, they've just simplified it. All whites are cardboard cutout, two-dimensional, if not one-dimensional characters. And the only nice people are ANC revolutionaries who really kind of people you'd want as your neighbors. So O'Brien first poses as the resistance in order to get Winston Smith to trust him. But it turns out in the end that he is part of the inner party and he's just testing him. He gets him to read the book, which is, he's doing a sting operation to basically get Winston Smith to show his true colors, that he really hates Big Brother and he's not loyal to the party. And then he gets tortured. And this novel, in fact, O'Brien has this classic statement of, if you want to vision of the picture. Imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever. That's the future. In other words, the boot of the party. Well, 1984 was prophetic in its insights to political directions, and we are there in many ways. The people will believe what the media tell them to believe. which is what happened in the whole 1984 situation. And how many people do you find today who believe exactly what SATV, Slime Magazine, Useless News and World Report, the whole Newspeak, and the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation, the Clinton News Network, and all the rest, they just believe what the Cape Crimes and the Sunday Crimes say. They regurgitate what they were taught in the school. You've got so much today where people are afraid of a thought crime, because if I don't say this and that, then I could be in trouble. So, for example, a friend of mine at the graduation service of Cornerstone, just across the street at the church there, when I had the graduation service, he, in his final charge to the theological students of a Christian university, in the words of Nelson Mandela, "I commission you. I am the master of my fate. I'm the captain of my soul." There wasn't, in a 3-hour graduation service, one scripture. There wasn't one quote from Jesus, the apostles, any of the reformers, church fathers, not Augustine, Calvin, nobody, not from Andrew Murray, not a quote from people like David Livingstone, nothing. They quoted from Martin Luther King Jr. repeatedly, Mandela, no end, Voltaire, for goodness sakes, Gandhi, why? And I'm talking about the Chancellor, talking about the guest speaker, the valedictorian, the whole lot. 3 hours, there was nothing particularly Christian. Well, we did sing one decent Christian hymn and one chorus, which was vaguely Christian, but of the speeches, there was nothing specifically Christian. And so afterwards, I challenged the individual's concern. When I spoke to my friend who is the Chancellor, I said, "Do you know that Martin Luther King was a pervert, a plagiarist, a liar, that he was a communist revolutionary? He never was a doctor, he wasn't a reverend, he plagiarized everything, and his name was never changed from Martin Luther King, he's Michael King. Do you know that?" And he said, "Yes, I do." So I said, "Then why do you quote from him?" He said, "Well, if I didn't, people would think that I'm a racist." And I said, "Well, now they know you're stupid and gutless."
Well said.
Do you know where this quote from Invictus comes from? Invictus is an anti-Christ atheistic poem. And the full context of it, which is what this Mandela film Invictus was named after. And they twice quote the whole poem. Well, here's the whole poem. "It matters not how straight the gate." What's the gate that's straight? Well, the narrow gate, the gate's heaven. "It matters not how charged with punishments the scroll." What scroll is charged with punishments? In the Bible. "To whatever gods there are, I declare, I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." This is an atheistic fist of rebellion against God. And a chancellor of a Christian university quotes this as the final words of commission to theological graduates? Are they kidding? I mean, how do you get people like this? Because that person used to be a National Party supporter, totally supportive of P.W. Botha, and discussing why apartheid was essential to the survival of a country. But he's got the Stockholm Syndrome. He's just shifted over, and he's quite happily espousing the party line, because whoever's in power. I mean, it's not a matter of backbone and having principles now. It's a matter of who's in power and what is the media saying. Now, the biggest problem is social media and the internet, because this is the alternative media. What you've now got is a situation where in Britain, Brexit last year, and the Trump revolution, although the entire media establishment, the entire educational establishment, political establishment, were 100% against Brexit and against Trump, but they won. Why? Social media, which can't be controlled by the central powers. I mean, 6 people control the mass media in America, and less than that in South Africa. About 2 people control the mass media in South Africa. But how can you control the alternative media, the social media? So that's where cyber harassment and cyber bullying comes in. Repetitive, relentless internet defamation. There are 10 goals of cyber harassment. You want to manipulate, disturb, upset, provoke, frighten, offend, pressure, control, persuade, and taunt. So, Nazi, racist, homophobe, bigot, fundamentalist, right-wing extremist, and, you know, whatever else, you know. There's no right-thinking person could disagree. All right-thinking people agree, and yeah, this is manipulative terminology. Where, and the moment you disagree, like my daughter did, suddenly hounded by her friends, till she is in such despair that honestly, I mean, she despaired of life itself. Just cruel how they can do it. But, you know, unfortunately, some young people are nice people and they actually like and trust their friends and don't think the friends are going to turn on it. In this case, not even for a political post, it was a pro-animal post. Cyberbullying is the other word. Teasing, rumors, gossip, insults, lies, name-calling. Name-calling is key. You notice how you don't read about left-wing extremists, but you're endlessly hearing about right-wing extremists. Well, you know, honestly, a lot of what they call right-wing extremists, I remember one of the attacks on us. Frontline Fellowship is associated with right-wing extremists, like Focus on the Family and the Promise Keepers. I thought, you have got to be kidding. I didn't know we were anywhere near them. I thought we were far to the right of them. I don't think Focus on the Family and the Promise Keepers are at all that conservative right wing. They seem pretty moderate, middle of the road to me. And but to a leftist pervert, James Dobson is one of the most hated names on the planet because he stands for one man, one woman, marriage for life. I mean, you know, how sick and debauched is that? He opposes so-called homosexual marriage. Well, so to him, he's the devil incarnate. And so to insult Frontline Fellowship, they're saying we are in a league with right-wing extremists like Folks in the Family. I thought, got to be kidding. We're way to the right of them. Cyberbullying is a real problem. And so what they're recommending is when a person starts to cyberbully, if you can't rationally deal with them, just block them, unfriend them, block them from your site. That's one thing you can do. Because there are people who will discuss with you and they might come around to, oh, thank you, now I understand now. And we've had those discussions. But then there's others who, they'll post 16 name-calling attacks in the space of an hour on one site. You think, now, this is beyond a joke. This is not a meaningful discussion now. This is just an insult-swapping operation. So cyber harassment is online backbiting. In fact, I call it backstabbing. One person posted this on my daughter's page saying, well, according to Proverbs 12, verse 10, Adolf Hitler must have been a good person. A good man is kind to his animals, but the wicked are cruel to theirs. And I posted this picture, and I thought, well, I don't know if you're actually proving anything with this picture. What's the point? Are you suggesting that this nice soldier that we showed a picture of, who's a private, who obviously didn't belong to, yes, you've posted a Nazi on your side. Well, that soldier's a private soldier. And you know, not even 5% of World War II Germany belonged to the National Socialist Party. Not even 2% of the Soviet Union belonged to the Communist Party. I wouldn't presume to say every single Russian was a communist. You can't say every single German was a Nazi. And even if they were, you can't suggest everyone necessarily had evil intentions. There could have been people who joined the Communist Party thinking they were doing a good thing because they're a product of brainwashing. Okay, so I then looked for, well, I Googled World War II soldiers being kind to animals. And these are the pictures I've got. I mean, these are all of them. This is not going to help the situation. Nope, wrong country, wrong nationality, wrong uniform. Nope, this is definitely not helping. This is Waffen-SS. Whoa, we're already getting in trouble with this one. Phew, at last I found a British naval sailor with a dog, and so I posted this one as well. So it could show, you know, we're equal opportunity. Our main point in We Love God's Animals is we're promoting being kind to animals. We're not trying to promote a political or military agenda here. So at last I could find, but honestly, I couldn't find others. I mean, I hunted. Then I found this one. I thought, boy, this is a lovely picture. American RSPCA, be kind to animals. That's a good, straightforward push. Okay, just to show you how mean media can be. There's a Department of Disinformation in Russia. I mean, look at this. There's obviously laughing Germans around some woman. How terrible is that? Except this is the original picture. The Soviet Union, when the Soviet Union fell, we managed to find a lot of the original pictures. They had professionals being able to alter pictures, and then put something in, make it look like these people are so dehumanized they don't care about hanging a woman. This classic picture, except that's the original. They painted this one in. This horrible picture, now of course the Soviets did capture a lot of uniforms and they did do atrocities in German uniforms, get pictures to use for the number of trials. But just look at the horizon. Same horizon, same machine gun in the foreground. They've put this picture on top of it. That's the original. And is that not interesting? This one of these soldiers looting a farm, hanging some woman. But in fact, that's the original picture. Now they've pulled them out. This is from documented Soviet Department of Disinformation, and they would get actual pictures and then they would doctor them up. This is another classic one you see often, except that's the actual picture. I mean, why would you hang someone from your... And by the way, that's not high enough anyway. But what a sick sadist that puts these sort of pictures together. This, even more disgusting, but that's the actual picture that they have doctored. And I mean, this is disgusting that they can produce pictures like this. Life magazine published this. Proof of the Holocaust, Jews being burned by Germans. Except when you pull back and you see the whole context, this is Dresden. This is the Altmark in the city square after the Dresden firebombing 1945, 14th of February, Valentine's Day gift. And so many people died that they were burning them in the village square. This is another classic propaganda pic that you see. It looks like some nasty German soldier shooting some poor woman trying to help cover her child. Except when you get the uncropped picture, you can see all the fields of fire are not aiming at these people. They must be coming under fire probably by Russian forces, and they're actually shooting to defend them. It's the exact opposite of what the picture says. The shadows are either absent or wrong. The soldiers aiming through the side of the woman. All rifles are aimed over the targets. And uniforms even inconsistent. Because, in fact, on the Eastern Front, German soldiers wore helmets. This is probably one of the Russian or Ukrainian divisions working with them who sometimes had those kind of caps. But, again, they're trying to protect these people, not shoot them. But that's why you crop the picture, you take away the context. What about this disgusting picture here? Actually, it's a modern film. But because you can immediately tell this is a modern film, it's in color, they put it in black and white in order to give people the impression that German soldiers actually picked up little kids and shot them in the head. And to be honest, if you wanted to do that, you wouldn't hold them close because honestly, I don't want to be disgusting, but there's a huge amount of brain splatter. You wouldn't want to be close. Why would you? If you were that sick and sadistic, you wouldn't be holding them close to your uniform, especially when you didn't have washing machines. Well, my father highly respected the man he was opposite in the Second World War, and he knew that German soldiers did a lot of good things. Now, here's some pictures that aren't fitting with the propaganda. I don't expect to see this in Time magazine lately, but it seems some of the countries that Germany invaded were not that unhappy to see them. And Russian soldiers captured by German soldiers. And there doesn't seem to be any hostility, hatred or fear. Neither does seem to be fear here. In fact, the soldier seems very happy to be captured. British airman, bomber pilot, no less, who survived the war and wrote about his time behind the wire. I've spoken to a lot of people who said we were never mistreated in our years in prison. You can see how the nurses were treated and the local people welcomed them. This is in Ukraine, where they were very much welcomed as liberators. But this is not what you're going to see from a media that's totally prejudiced and demonizing the Germans. And obviously there's two sides to any war, if not multiply more than two, but there's not just one side. But this is Yugoslavia. You would never see these pictures because this doesn't fit with the narrative. Because the narrative's simple. Germans bad, evil, Second World War, the good war, the good guys won, we saved the world, and notice how the world's been so much better ever since. And Latvia, and people in Lithuania welcoming German soldiers to rescue them from the Russians. And so we could continue. Notice this chaplain service in the field in the Eastern Front. You don't see those pictures often. You don't see the crosses either. I have been told in school German soldiers never buried their dead under crosses. Well, there's a lot of examples of chivalry. For example, deep, there's a Canadian flag. That's what the Canadian flag looked like in 1942. And they organized for the Canadians decent honourable military funerals, which is the way that honourable men treat their enemies on both sides. There's a lot more that we should know. And I've been, over the years, reading a lot of books that have taught me that we have been lied to about the First and Second World War. What if history they teach us isn't even close to what really happened? Congressman Ron Paul, a Republican, is a really innovative speaker. He says, what if the American people woke up and understood that the official reasons for going to war are almost always based on lies and promoted by war propaganda in order to serve special interests? We know that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. No, Saddam Hussein didn't have poison gas, he didn't have nuclear weapons, he wasn't planned to destroy the world. We destroyed a good country, destabilized it, and over a million Christians have suffered as a result of this mindless war. And in Syria, similar things being happening. They lie, lie, lie. They've lied about us, they've lied about all other countries around, wherever America's targeted. Why do we think they're telling the truth about what happened in the First and Second World War? It's no coincidence that the century of total war coincided with the century of central banking. We've had Stephen Mitford Goodson, one time director of the Southern Reserve Bank, here at the Reformation Society, telling us in his book, sold through CLB documents, that all the wars of the 20th century have been bankers' wars. There's another story which is being missed. And A.J.P. Taylor was my first source on understanding the First and Second World War, and he is absolutely brilliant. He challenged us on a whole range of things. Remember A.J.P. Taylor saying Germany didn't plan for or want a world war, either in the First or the Second. They weren't prepared for it, and they never put their factories on war footing. West Britain was on 24 hours, 7 days a week from 1939 already, and a woman poured into factories. West Germany never let the mothers get into the factories, ever, in the whole of the war. And they only went to 24-hour day work patterns in the factories in 1943, when it was too late. Most of the factories were already wrecked. And in fact, as A.J.P. Taylor points out, Germany lost because they did not adhere to the principles of total war. Britain and America were on total war. Russia was on total war. Germany never went on to total war. Albert Speer was begging, allow the mothers of Germany to be put into factories and I can have 12 million more workers. And Hitler said, that's what we're fighting for. We're not going to be tearing our families apart. Who's going to be bringing up the children? No, we're not putting mothers in factories. FDR was, Stalin was, Churchill was. These are things you don't normally know. And Patrick Buchanan's Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War gives us even more insights, which is exactly the opposite of what we've been given by the Hollywood media. As is Hitler, Hess, and Churchill book. There's a lot of books that I've digested that have brought me to the conviction that we've been lied to. The most of what we're getting from the media of Hollywood is to cover up the atrocities of the Allies, such as betraying 3 million Russians and Ukrainians behind the Iron Curtain at the end of the Second World War into the hands of Stalin, brutal as a result of the Yalta Agreement, which our friends in Eastern Europe all talk about. And this is one of the reasons why Patton was assassinated, because he objected and he refused to hand over these many Russians who had been given to him. Not to mention millions of Germans who were handed over by the Allies from the West to Stalin to be worked to death in the salt mines and as slaves in the Soviet Union, all of which Patton objected to, which is another reason why he was murdered. As to the other losses, documents how more German soldiers died after the war in Allied prison camps than died during the war on all fronts. I mean, that's just extraordinary. In less than a year after the war, more German soldiers died in Allied prison camps than died in 6 years of war, fighting the most brutal war imaginable. And the German civilians who died after the Second World War, absolutely astronomically shocking. James Bach documents 14 million Germans killed in the 3 years following the Second World War. But this hellstorm is not allowed to be told by Hollywood, because they continually try and tell us we were the good guys, they were the bad guys, we fought for freedom, democracy and all that, and the world has been saved as a result. Not according to Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who was in the Soviet concentration camps, or Professor Rummel in his Death by Government, which shockingly lists the 15 most brutal mass murdering governments of the 20th century. And you would be as shocked as I was to find Nazi Germany wasn't even in the top 15. because Turkey, the Soviet Union, I mean, China, all these other countries, the amount of people that their governments had killed. Hungary was even higher up the list of mass murderers. And yet, according to Hollywood, there's only been one evil nation in the 20th century, and that's Germany, and the Second World War was the good war. And the good guys won, like Mao in China. But then 1991, as the communist archives opened, these six communists, including the editor of Communismo magazine, Stefan Corte, were converted from communism and wrote this 900-and-something page doorstopper that if you dropped it on your foot, you'd be limping. It's just solid documentation for the communist own archives of the over 100 million people killed in the Soviet bloc. This isn't counting Red China, because we don't have their archives yet. So this flag, the Soviet flag, glorifies the murders of over 100 million people in the hands of communism, and yet people can wear Soviet brand, hammers and sickles, red stars, wave red flags. And that's not considered a big problem. If you produce anything resembling a swastika, even if it is something that was the military symbol of Finland, and it's a Hindu symbol and so on. I mean, people get hysterical about swastika because they've seen it depicted as its epitome of evil in how many hundreds of Hollywood films. But the hammer and sickle barely gets a yawn. I mean, there's no stigma attached to it. George Orwell says, political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder sound respectable. The CIA launched Operation Mockingbird after the Second World War to basically disinform and to cover up atrocities of the West and to lie and to demonize the enemy, even to justify things like assassinating the Shah of Iran, toppling Persia when because we needed to taking over Iceland, invading any kind of neutral country to help save the Soviet Union and to channel arms and all sorts of other things, overthrowing the Iraq government, and bombing these people, poisoning those people, and so on. So they did a survey in Europe just recently. Would you fight for your country? The lowest comes from Holland, somewhere at 14%, Germany 18%, Britain only 27%, Spain 21%, Italy 20%. Only in the Eastern Bloc do you get anything resembling a majority. 62% Ukraine, 59% Russia. The highest in Europe is Finland. 74% of Finns say they would fight for their country. What has happened that the majority of Europeans are no longer willing to fight for their own country? First and Second World War. Two brutal, sadistic, mindless, worthless wars where everything got worse as a result. But they're meant to believe the propaganda that these were great wars and we won and everything's got better as a result. No wonder the bulk of people think, well, I don't think it's worth fighting for anything because, I mean, look, we've got my parents and grandparents' generation. And I remember my dad was getting towards the end of his life saying, you know, I think we were on the wrong side. He just couldn't believe what was happening to his own country and how they'd betrayed us in Rhodesia and we fought for Britain. Why would they stab us in the back when we're fighting? So most of the people in Europe don't even think Europe's worth fighting for, which is why the Muslims are able to invade right now. Now, right now, the internet is enabling people to have a voice that they haven't had before. And so the cyberbullying is coming in order to shut up this alternative voice. Now look at this one. This is Charlottesville. Stop Trump. Make racists afraid again. Did you know that Donald Trump is a racist? Not that I've noticed. But this is the socialist alternative, redflag.org. Redflag.org. Why? Make racists afraid again. War against the statues and monuments is part of PSYOPs. It's part of psychological warfare. And why are they targeting the most honorable gentleman that's ever worn a uniform and fought on any side? I mean, Robert E. Lee must be about as exemplary a character as it's possible to have. I don't know if anybody could come up with one thing he did wrong. Nobody even knows that he ever raised his voice. I mean, he went through how many wars and how many terrible things, and he's not known to have ever lost his temper or been mean. And he's when Confederates were furious over the fact that before in wars, if the war carried on a bit long, you could have prison exchange. But the Yankees refused to do prison exchange because they knew Confederates are worth, one Confederate's worth several Yankees as far as fighting capability went. They didn't want to let any of these soldiers go back to the South because they were worth more than their own men. They didn't want their men to come out. And yet they were blockading and starving the South. Of course, scorched earth and everything else. So they knew that many of their own soldiers were going to starve in the prisons along with the soldiers were guarding them were also starving. At this point, a group of officers were complaining about, if these were my prisoners, I wouldn't give them a damn thing. They could starve to death like they're making our people starve up in the north and so on. I mean, here they're starving us and so on. And Robert E. Lee came out of his tent. And he walked past these men. He didn't even look at them. He said, they're not your prisoners. They're my prisoners. And they will have exactly the same rations as we have as long as I'm alive. And he kept walking. And these men all knew they were in for the high jump. He would not tolerate if a soldier looted, when they were going through Pennsylvania and so on, if any Confederate soldier looted anything or mistreated someone, they would be put against a wall and shot. He would not tolerate any abuse of the local population. This man is about as exemplary as they come. How dare anyone target him and his monuments for destruction? Well, George Orwell tells us why. The most effective way to destroy people is to deny and obliterate their own understanding of their history. Attacking your history is psyops. It's part of psychological warfare. And this is someone who claims she's an American, but she's holding some other flag, and she's standing on an upside-down US flag, and this is a person doubtless living on welfare. But these people are the enemy. This is the alternate right. These are all racists, Ku Klux Klan members, and they obviously deserve to be exterminated. They don't deserve to live, according to all the tweets and so on about them. Whenever there's a big story in the media, look for the story they're trying to distract you from. The big story is not what's on SABC, CNN. They will always be giving you the distraction. When people are picking your pocket, they distract you. So, the feelings of others are offensive. We demand you restrict them. And this basically sums up a lot of what you're getting. Social justice warriors, SJWs, okay, social justice warriors. And so they are campaigning, whether it's Rhodes must fall, or Robert E. Lee must fall, or Stonewall Jackson must fall, or whatever it is. Fees must fall, doesn't matter what must fall, it all must fall. And they all scream about their feelings. I feel offended. Well, their behavior offends me too, but we're not out there burning anything. Well, big business and big government and the multi-industrial complex are thrilled. In fact, they probably set this up because these people are fools. Or shall I use the word of Lenin? Useful idiots. Because every time they demonstrate and burn and so on, they're playing into the hands of the powers that be of the New World Order, who want to have more restrictive laws, heavier taxes, clamp down, restrict, and they especially want to clamp down free speech. So if you can have some idiots giving death threats on the social media, we need to supervise and control the internet. What they're trying to do? Crack down free speech. How is it even possible that you can run through the streets with face masks causing damage? I mean, what does it take for the police to arrest you all? If you're doing damage to public property or you're wearing a mask in a public demonstration, could we march on Parliament wearing masks? I don't think so. How is it that the Americans allow this? What are these people doing? I mean, even the fact that the police have to wear all this gear. I remember in the old days that the police didn't have to wear any protective gear because if you got on the wrong side of police, they shumbocked you. I mean, they knew how to sort you out. You didn't dare mess with the police. I don't remember our police needing to wear full body armor and so on because, I mean, if you mess with the police, they knocked you over the head with a truncheon or they shot you. You feared the police. You didn't cause grief. And so this is what the whole thing is about. To have something to try and make out that the alternate right are not just racist, they're violent. Now, of course, the fact that other guys are murdering who knows how many people doesn't matter. We're fighting fascism by beating people up and committing arson. Soros, George Soros, billionaire, pays for these domestic terrorist groups. He is funding them to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. These rioters, from the day that Trump was in power, he's been funding to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars people who've had professional demonstrations and riots. How this is even legal and possible and allowed is another question. And these people are demonstrating all over the place. And here in Germany, no love for Germany. Antifa or anti-fascists are domestic terrorists. They burn things and they're wearing masks, which shouldn't be allowed. The evil white race must be destroyed. The white racists and the Hebe masters, does anyone know what Hebe stands for? Must be purged from the face of the earth. The children of the white racists are the future of the white race. This is where we must begin and end. With Trump in power, it's far too late for conversion of the racist children. Thus, we are left with only one option to do what must be done. But take heart, after the purge we will live in a workers' paradise free from racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia. Transphobia? Is that people phobic about transgenders or whatever? And oppression. National Antifa or Anti-Fascist Front. 1 year ago, to this day, a black criminal pointed a stolen gun at a black police officer, got shot by the black police officer who was protecting a black neighborhood, and the black residents respond by burning down their neighborhood, and you may ask why? Well, because Black Lives Matter. This is the innocent 23-year-old child shot by police in Milwaukee because Black Lives Matter, and they're using it to justify the burning and looting of their own neighborhoods. It makes you wonder why they even get the vote. When they think that free food, free housing, free phones, free healthcare, and free education aren't enough, looting. There's nothing that shows you care about lives better than looting shoe stores. As Ajay Rushdoony said, slaves see freedom as license. Free people see freedom as responsibility. Despite the narrative that tells us that race is a social construct and that we're living in a post-racial society, race consciousness is more prevalent now than it's probably ever been in the history of mankind. And it's the non-whites who've had this race consciousness while whites have been consumed with false guilt and a belief that they have no interest as a group or that they don't even exist as a group. And this is the result of decades of indoctrination, brainwashing, guilt manipulation. Society in the 24th century is more racialized than ever before. Everything now revolves around race. I mean, America elected a man for no other reason than he is black. I mean, he is, without a doubt, the worst president I've ever had, and I've had a lot of bad presidents. But he's the worst.
And I think he was elected. I think he was placed there.
Oh. I mean, nobody even knew he was. It's just like, we couldn't vote against him because he's black. So, they're now saying it's open season white people. BLM, Black Lives Matter. Like, roads must fall over here. RMF. So, all my heroes kill cops. So, are these not a hate group? Black Lives Matter? So, white people advocating and pursuing their own interests like the National Front in Britain, they're a racist, intolerant hate group. But black people advocating and pursuing their own interests, that's progressive righteousness, social justice. Right? Now, Iceland, which is apparently 95% homogeneous, no racism, no hostility. London, which is probably the most multiracial city in the world, racism and violence all over the place. Multiculturalism means inevitable group conflict. You can blame Mother Nature. I mean, the point is, good fences do make good neighbors. And you can see this where if you've got people who've got their own property and they visit one another, they're polite and respectful. But if everything's owned by everybody and nothing's owned by anybody, and it's all big socialist, you've got a lot of conflict. It's when people know that there's ownership, you can even see it with children. When they know, this is your toy, that's theirs, you've got to ask, and, you know, is communal things, conflict. Charlton Heston said, political correctness is just tyranny with manners. I wish for you the courage to be unpopular. Popularity is history's pocket change. Courage is history's true currency. Courage is gold. Political correctness, it's cheap. Aristotle, 2,400 years ago, said tolerance and apathy are the last virtues of a dying society. I was brought up thinking that to be intolerant was good. We should be intolerant of bad manners. We should be intolerant of rudeness. We should be intolerant, well, like a policeman should be intolerant of crime. A doctor should be intolerant of disease. A fireman should be intolerant of fire hazards. And so you continue. But now, tolerance in and of itself is good. But what about the thing being tolerated? Tolerance is a device used to introduce a new law system as a prelude to a new intolerance. And this has been well documented in the agenda films. Antonio Gramsci explained it. He's the founder of the Italian Communist Party. Antonio Gramsci explained, Lenin got lucky. We're not going to be that lucky. We are not going to have the correlation of forces that enabled Lenin to seize the Soviet Union with not even 2% of the population on the side. Europe is too Christian. We need to be cultural termites. Revolution in the streets is not going to work. We've got to quietly work through the education institutions, the entertainment industry, the news media. We must Marxize the inner man. We need to get people to see everything without reference to God or the Bible. We need to get them to look at everything, not just to make them non-Christian in their mindset, but to make them anti-Christian in their mindset. And people said to Antonio Gramsci, you'll never achieve this, Europe's too Christian. He said, it'll take time, but we can do it in just two or three generations. When Bill Clinton became president of the United States in 1992, 1993, he was asked, who is your mentor? He said, Antonio Gramsci. Antonio Gramsci. How do you create a socialist state? Saul Alinsky, who Obama said was his mentor. Saul Alinsky says, there's eight levels of control you must obtain before you can create a socialist state. So these were his rules for radicals. Healthcare, control healthcare, you control the people. Poverty, increase the poverty level as high as possible. Poor people, easy to control and cannot fight back if you're providing them with everything they need to live. That's what 1984 was. Everyone's kept poor. And why is there perpetual war? To consume the excess products to justify why people have been kept poor. That was the 1984 logic. Debt, increase the debt to an unsustainable level. He quadrupled America's national debt. The best way you're able to increase taxes, produce more poverty. Yes, they did that. Gun control, remove people's ability to defend themselves, make them dependent on a police state. Welfare, take control of every aspect of their lives, food, housing, income. Education, take control of what the people read and listen to, take control of what the children learn in school, think Common Core. Religion, remove belief of God from school and from government and from the textbooks. Class warfare, divide the people into wealthy and poor, create more discontent, becomes easier to tax. Have we seen this? These are just some Muslim Brotherhood leaders that Obama put in charge of everything from Homeland Security to the FBI. So, while this was the main item in news media in America, one Hispanic who shot a black terrorist who was attacking him, that was all in news media. But what they won't tell you about an American Muslim terrorist who murdered a whole lot of people in Fort Hood. And this Boston bomber, Muslim Chechen Muslim terrorist, who murdered these people, these weren't media. They were vaporized. They were unpeople. This is what you were to be distracted with. This is the picture the media put out of the man that he shot. But this is a picture when he was 12. This is what he really looked like at the time he was shot. But why do they put this picture out all the time in the media? Well, because he looks like a nice innocent boy. But in fact, that's what he really looked like. Gangster. America's got their race baiters, we've got ours. Okay, here's the facts. They're telling us whites are racist, murdering black people. In 1 year, 193 blacks were killed by whites in America. In the same year, 448 whites were killed by blacks, even though blacks are only 13% of the population, whereas 2,447 blacks were killed by blacks. So, here's another statistic that people put together in 2015. Of the blacks killed, 2% were killed by whites. Of the blacks killed by police, that was 1% of the blacks killed. The whites killed by police, 3%. So whites had a 3 times higher chance of being killed by the police than blacks did. The police say in America they hesitate to shoot a black man because they're going to be in trouble. Whites killed by whites, 16%. Whites killed by blacks, 81%. Blacks killed by blacks, 97% of all the blacks who were killed. Homicide were done by other blacks. Here's other statistics for 2014 showing you for the black, the Hispanic, and the white categories of how basically most of the violent crime, shooting, murder, and rape is done by black people in America, even though they're only 13% of the population. So if people want to debate on race, it's not supporting the narrative of the media, which is horrible, evil, white racists and poor, innocent black victims. And here you've got more of the stats of how in 2010, from the FBI statistics, although there were 12% of the U.S. population that committed 32% of all the rapes, 34% of the assaults, 54% of the robberies, 49% of the murders. And most blacks murdered were murdered by other blacks. So this doesn't support the narrative. Booker T. Washington said there is a class of colored people who make a business of keeping the troubles, the wrongs, and the hardships of the Negro race before the public. Having learned that they're able to make a living out of their troubles, they've grown into the settled habit of advertising their wrongs, partly because they want sympathy, and partly because it pays. Some of the people do not want the Negro to lose his grievances because they don't want to lose their jobs. It's like Judas. Why was this perfume not sold and the money given to the poor? And John adds, Judas wasn't concerned for the poor. Judas was a thief. Truth is truth. even if no one believes it. A lie is a lie, even if everyone believes it. You don't find the truth by getting a show of hands. I mean, majority opinion does not determine truth. Remember, democracy was when the crowd chose Barabbas to be released. You can have no end of attacks on whites by black thugs, and that's not media news. Apparently, race is a social construct, but they support affirmative action. How can standing up for the world's smallest ethnic minority be called racist? In 1910, whites were 36% of the world's population. Today we are 9% of the world's population. 9%. That's happened one century. How? Well, the world wars helped. Abortions really helped. And, of course, massive hysteria, family planning, homosexuality, and hysteria about overpopulation. And so whites have gone from being the dominant population of the world in 1910 to being about the most endangered minority on the planet. And so today a minority is the term used by liars and deceivers to describe the world's majority populations. Your average anti-wife says there's no place for racism in society and then blames everything on the white people. Is that not contradictory? White people are the only race you can legally discriminate against, even have laws promoting it. In South Africa, we know it. I mean, we've got children involved in sports, and so often, I mean, they now know it. It's, you know, even whether it's hockey, whether it's ice skating, whether it's dancing, whether it's water polo, long distance running, whatever it is, the black is going to get the position, whether he's the best or not. It doesn't matter how good you are. If you're too male and if you're too pale, no chance. Acronym for racist, rather annoying communist-inspired silencing tactic. Imagine somebody saying, I voted for George Bush just because he's white, and I'm white, and I want a white president. And yet that's what people said, they vote for Obama because he's black. So why isn't it racism when 94% of blacks in America say they voted for the black man, not for the white man, even though they didn't support his policies? Even pro-life Pentecostals with names written in the Lamb's Book of Life, blood-washed, tongue-speaking Pentecostals who support pro-life, they voted for the pro-abortion pervert Obama. Why? Because he's black. I wouldn't vote for a white pro-abort no matter what. So the most narcissistic pervert out there got himself into the White House. So Jamie Foxx, which like most black Hollywood stars is a foul-mouthed, vulgar pervert, said publicly, I kill all the white people in the movie. How great is that? That's meant to be funny. These are actual signs out there. This is at UCT in Cape Town, kill all whites, t-shirt openly displayed in a mess hall there. Have you heard of the knockout game where blacks come and just attack whites without warning, come up from behind them and knock them out, sometimes killing them? The goal is to knock them out with one blow. And if you kill them, you get high scores. And they often film themselves doing it. Normally coming from behind, this man died. They hit him so hard and he fell into the wall and cracked his skull. And these are, they were filmed. It turns out that the most racist people are the ones screaming racist all the time. The truth does not change just because you do not want to hear it. This is going on all over the place. Every day in the United States, 100 white women are raped or sexually assaulted by a black man. 90% of all interracial crimes in America are committed by blacks against whites. And in South Africa, even worse, where we're the minority. There was a time when the men of Europe would have responded differently to their women being raped by foreign invaders. Truth sounds like hate to those who hate the truth. But there is a resistance in Poland, in Germany. The people are standing up, they're resisting, they're fighting, they're saying refugees are not welcome. Refugees not welcome. But now they're being told, if you're against rape, you're a Nazi. We'll trade racists for rapists. Are there people on the planet this dumb? I mean, really. And in they come. And this is the result of people not willing to fight for their own countries. But why not? Because they're afraid that if they try and speak out against it, they could be called a racist or a Nazi. And if Islam is so wonderful, then why is every land ruled by them hellish nightmares from which they're trying to escape? They've destroyed their own countries. They demand Western nations cater their culture. They won't fight for their own rights, but they destroy the food packages because they don't like the type of food. In Italy, they said, we've been given too much pasta. But why'd they come to Italy? And this is the new Europe, brought to you by bleeding heart liberals. Once they're done destroying their own country, they want to move to yours. Some people are brave enough to say Islam is the world's biggest paedophile ring, because they believe that child abuse and rape is perfectly acceptable, and what we call statutory rape, marrying minors, is acceptable. This is not immigration. This is not asylum seeking. This is an invasion. So as George Orwell said, during a time of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes an offensive act. It's a revolutionary act to tell the truth, and that's why truth is now being called hate speech. This is going on around us. This is what they're teaching in the English school textbooks. This was the winner of Miss Helsinki in Finland 2016. I mean, is this prejudiced? I mean, you know, really, I'm not supporting beauty competitions. I don't think beauty competitions are a good idea at all. But really and truly, are these people brain dead or blind? And this is feminism. And this is femininity. Feminism's destroying civilization and abortion. That is what child sacrifice looked like back in the Mayan civilization. And this is Planned Parenthood's headquarters in Houston, Texas. Is this by accident or by design? Now, the third world's exploding, but the West are aborting their own kids and their own futures. Black lives matter. But, you know, if you say that white lives matter or all lives matter, then you're racist. But this is not racist. There's a whole new dynamic that we're missing, and more than 1 million people are mixed race, fastest growing ethnic group in the country. This is England. Within a couple of generations, this will seem like a really redundant debate because people are falling in love with each other and making babies. And that's where the future lies, and that's where hope should be. In the Sunday Telegraph, what's he talking about? He's saying the English people are going to cease to exist. And that's a good thing. And that's their hope. And these are the new refugees. And they're really tolerant. And fortunately, they come from a peaceful, tolerant religion, which is butcher all those who mock Islam. They love this coexist sign, but it's hard to coexist with people who want to kill you. While your children are learning to tolerate their children are training to kill your children. And this is how they show their appreciation. Democracy go to hell, burn national flags, put Stockholm ablaze, burn down Sweden, go hysterical. And this is what diversity means. And that's why people are saying diversity is code word for genocide. They're trying to wipe out white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, WASPs, which is the worst thing on earth, in their heartlands. No country is to be left to white people. And why is there so much hatred for the white people? Is it because the gospel and missions has been championed by them? Is this because the Protestant Reformation came to us? Multiculturalism is not diversity, it's white genocide. If you think that this looks nice, you're a racist. Because this is obviously a racist image. I mean, why on earth does she have a white baby? I mean, it's evil to have blue eyes and blonde hair. Literally, they say so. This is evil. This is backward. Terrible. I mean, there's not enough diversity here. This is at the Fort Trucker Monument celebrating the Great Trek, by the way. And if you think that this looks like a nice couple, you're obviously a racist. And this picture got a lot of negative responses because apparently this is a picture from Germany during the Nazi years. Well, I didn't know that. I wouldn't have known that except somebody on social media screamed blue murder that this picture came from Nazi art. I just thought this was a good picture and just posted on Victorious Christian Woman because, I mean, doesn't it look nice? A mother with the children? No, but that's an evil racist thought. This is definitely evil because this is a picture from a Nazi propaganda poster. This is a German girl in the Olympics 1936. Now you can see the swastika, so now you know this is evil. And you can see this is what's got to go. This is what's got to be wiped out. You cannot have any more of these white Übermensch. I mean, evil. Absolutely evil, right? And so some people now are posting things like this, and you would thought, well, this is a bit obvious, but apparently people are needing to remind themselves what a Frenchman or Polish person looks like. Yes, they're getting confused. And traditional groups like this are being condemned as racist, nationalist, extremist, right-wing, fundamentalist, neo-Nazi people. Notice this. The golden jackal of East Africa and this jackal of Eurasia, two very distinct different species. You can see that. But these are exactly the same. There's no difference. And if you think there's a difference, then you're obviously an evil racist. Now, if race is only skin deep, why can you still tell which race each of these come from? Because they've made everyone white. It's more than skin. It's culture. And every culture... I've got a lot of Zulu friends, and the Zulus are proud of being Zulu. And the Matabele are proud of being Zulu. Being Matabele, there's nothing wrong with each race. But when they want to wipe out one, that's genocide. Your average leftist preaches diversity, but thinks we're all the same. That's why George Orwell, and I keep coming back to him, says, the further a society drifts from the truth, the more it'll hate those who speak the truth. We're losing the war on whites because of the bravery. We're not losing the war on whites because of the bravery or valor of the enemy, or because of the superior fighting spirit. We're losing it because the presence behind a lines of an enormous fifth column of backstabbing collaborators and traitors. Our biggest enemy are not people of other races. They're white Stockholm Syndrome traitors, Volksverrais, who hate the fact that they are white, and they hate us as a result. I don't know what their case is, but when they say diversity, they mean racial replacement. They want to see the end of the English in England, the end of the Polish in Poland, end of the Swedes in Sweden, and so on. This is what they want. And this is nothing but genocide. To celebrate diversity is not the same thing as to destroy diversity. This does not exactly encourage people to want to book a holiday ticket to Durban. Are you not culturally enriched? The goal of abolishing the white race, said Professor Noel Igniter in Harvard Magazine, is on the face of it so desirable that some may find hard to believe that it could have any opposition. Make no mistake, we intend, now this is a professor of Harvard University, we intend to keep on bashing the dead white males and the live ones and the females too until the social construct known as the white race is destroyed. Do you know that people talking about killing all whites? Professor Noel Igniter declared, I'd like to put white males in concentration camps, and when they're all dead, we can throw a party and dance around their corpses. This is a professor at Harvard University. This character, founding father of the EU, really, Richard Coddenhoff Kalergi, he says we want to turn Europe into a mixed race of Asians and Negroes. And his plan receives an award every year for the person, there is a Coddenhoff Calgary Award every year, given by the EU, because he was really the founding father. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the greatest Russian author of the 20th century, wrote, you must understand the leading Bolsheviks who took over Russia were not Russians. He opposes using the word the Russian Revolution. It wasn't a Russian Revolution. It was an anti-Russian revolution. It was the Bolshevik Revolution. They hated Russians. They hated Christians. Driven by ethnic hatred, they tortured and slaughtered millions of Russians without a shred of remorse. It cannot be overstated. Bolshevism committed the greatest human slaughter of all time, and the fact that most of the world is ignorant and uncaring about this enormous crime is proof that the global media is in the hands of the perpetrators. You wonder why the media doesn't speak about it? Without Jews, there would never have been Bolshevism, said Solzhenitsyn. For a Jew, nothing is more insulting than the truth. The bloodthirsty Jewish terrorists have murdered 66 million in Russian from 1918 to 1957. And you wonder why the media doesn't report on it, because it's their crime. They love their people. They love what the communists do. The people running Hollywood, these cocaine-sniffing drug addicts and perverts, they hate Christ. The people who blaspheme Christ are the ones who have written our textbooks and who produce our movies, who have given us our understanding of the world and our understanding of the Second World War and ourselves. Even the term racist is a term made up by Leon Trotsky, the head of the Red Army, the man responsible for the biggest massacres ever. And he used the term racist. Anyone who condemned communism was called a racist. How easy is that? And here's a Jewish university professor at University of Aberdeen. And this professor, Nathan Abraham, says Jews in America have been sexual revolutionaries. A large amount of material on sexual liberation was written by Jews. Those at the forefront of the movement which forced America to adopt a more liberal view of sex were Jewish. Jews were at the vanguard of the sexual revolution in the 1960s. And he names them. And they've replaced Marx and Trotsky and Lenin as required revolutionary reading. Pornography thus becomes a way of defiling Christian culture. And as it penetrates the very heart of American mainstream, and no doubt is consumed by the very same white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, its subversive character becomes more charged. And he's happy about this. Jewish involvement by porn is the result of altruistic hatred of Christian authority. They're trying to weaken the dominant culture in America by moral subversion. Now, I've been saying for over 30 years that pornography is moral subversion, but I never knew about the identity of the people behind it. But it so happens that like 97% of the pornographers in America are Jewish. And I wonder, they hate Christianity, they love blasphemy, they hate Christ. And the incredible thing is, the biggest crime, you can do almost anything, it's not a problem. But the biggest crime is to criticize Judaism or say anything against any Jewish individual, then you're a Nazi, then you're a bigot, then you're horrible, and that's the most unforgivable sin on the planet. I mean, you can promote almost anything, like kill all whites, exterminate these people, whatever, I mean, no problem. They can actually massacre millions, not a problem. But, you know, you bring out a Confederate flag and try to defend Robert E. Lee and you're suddenly a racist. Here's a horrible quote from John Calvin. Their rotten and unbending stiff-neckedness demands that they be oppressed unendingly and without measure or end, and that they die in their misery without the pity of anyone. And R.C. Sproul, one of the top apologists of our time, was asked on TV a while ago, how can he be celebrating a Reformation 500 when Martin Luther said such horrible things about Jews? And he said, well, you've got to understand the context. The Jews were running the banks, usury, they were responsible for widows and orphans losing their homes, and they were producing the pornography, running child porn and white slavery and all the rest of it, and literally trafficking people from Europe into Muslim slave trade and into the harem. So you must understand what Luther and Calvin were speaking against was moral evil in their time, which happened to be centered around those people. So it wasn't speaking against Jews as Jews, but against those Jews who were running that whole industry. Of course, Jewish people who got converted are brothers in Christ. That's not the problem. The problem was the pagans were the main people running, and today it's true as well. The pedophilia, child porn, all the pornography, the blasphemy industry, it's run by them. But most Christians today are so much in the Stockholm Syndrome, singing the praises of the Jews in Israel and condemning any brother in Christ who dares to say anything like this, which I don't know anyone today dare to say something as harsh as what Calvin said. So diversity equals white genocide. Anti-racist is a code word for being anti-white. White supremacist is just a slur for being a white. I don't know any whites who believe in white supremacy. There's a lot of blacks who believe in black supremacy. There's a lot of Jews who believe in Jewish supremacy. Are they against hate or are they just anti-white? And so there's a whole lot of people speaking about genocide through created wars and conflict. Do you think how many tens of millions of Europeans were massacred in the First and Second World War? Not just combatants either. Civilians at home. Pregnant mothers, babies, kids, wiped out in bombings of... And so the devastation is caused by the banksters and the Zion Corp and all that, and through the media and through the guilt manipulation. And this is the point. Right now, we have got... a multicultural campaign where this woman claims, Barbara Lemmer Spector, that you can actually see her video where she's speaking. She lives in Sweden. She says, you know, we're in the forefront of turning Europe into a multicultural continent, and that's why we're being resented, which is true. The key to solving the social problem of our age is to abolish the white race. Dr. Noel Ignatieff of Harvard hasn't stopped yet. So, when our Lord Jesus said, hypocrites, fools, blind guides, snakes, vipers, children of hell, in Matthew 23, many false Christians today would unfriend Jesus, call him a Pharisee, and unfriend him for his judgmental, harsh tone, because what the Lord said in Matthew 23 sounds a bit too harsh. And so right now today, the biggest virtue is tolerance. And the main vices, well, being a Christian or expressing Christian views. There's no end of things that one could say, but let me end on this picture. Our Lord said, things that cause people to sin are bound to come, but woe to him through whom they come. It's better for him that a millstone be tied around his neck to be cast in the depths of the sea than that he allow one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble.